Welcome, friends. This is Red Eyes Creations Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and I am your host. And we are, of course, recording from the west coast of Sweden. This is our own internet talk radio show available through our website, redeyescreations.com, that, yes, has been down, or suspended rather, for about a day and a half due to the most, I guess, stupid and silly spam issue and the consequent cowardly behavior of our web server hosting company, one.com. What's been happening here is that apparently someone with an AOL.com email account have been sending spam or mass email messages with some or to some religious organizations. I don't know all the details yet, but apparently this mail contained a link to an article on redeyescreations.com. And this article was actually about the, in quotes here, the dragon, Prince Nicholas de Veer von Drakenberg, for all of you out there who know who this guy is. But anyway, the question I had to the server hosting companies, why they didn't relay the issue to AOL's abuse department, and I just don't understand where I or redeyescreations.com come into the picture here, but and who decides to link to what sites in their spam emails or whatever. This is something totally out of my control, and I thought that this was pretty obvious, but I guess not. They thought that I was behind the spam advertisement and decided to suspend the site before even consulting me about the issue. And the web server hosting company expressed also fear of being blacklisted, whatever that means. And I mean, my guess is that if the Illuminati is behind making people scared, sheeple that just follows orders without thinking or questioning, well, then I guess that the Illuminati is indirectly involved with this one. I don't know, but I have no idea. I'm going to continue to ask the questions to kind of try to figure out what has happened and why and how we can prevent this from happening in the future, and I'll keep you posted about it. But I don't want to spend too much time on that. I just want to briefly go through so you guys out there know what has been going on. But we do have a guest with us today, and let's spend our time on that for the rest of the show. And it's a great pleasure to have back with us again our good friend, our regular guest, writer, musician, and creative artist Christopher Morse. And of course, Christopher's website is creativecosmos.org, and I suggest everyone to head on over there right away and take a look at his writing, his art, and his music. He got books and CDs and some beautiful prints available with his wonderful art, so pop on over there and take a look. It's creativecosmos.org. And we have a theme for today's show on past lives and previous civilizations. So let me just bring on Chris right away. So say welcome back to the show. It's great to have you back again, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, nice job, man. That's cool. I was just thinking about some of the art prints today and how I want to take some of the best of them and do a nice edition and put them up on the gift shop so people could get them. And yeah, I mean, that's thanks for the heads up and the overview, and we're always trying to include new things at the Creative Cosmos. And you know, of course, also the Soul School is a thing I spent a good amount of time putting together that might be interesting for some of you to check out, to highlight today if you haven't checked it out before, where I put a whole bunch of links and pictures to masters and people who talk about the astral realms and mm-hmm. mystic scientists and all kinds of people that I considered kind of building up the work that we continue here today.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you also got a you got consultation through Skype, right?
Yeah, I set that up, just a little link where if you want to talk to me through Skype, you know, just make a little donation or something into the Creative Cosmos coffers, and we'll set up a time to talk. And just like Henrik and I are today, if you have just something on your mind, you know, any kind of a thing. You know, there's all kinds of little astral disturbances that could happen. You know, you might get an entity around you, or you might be getting these dreams you need to get to the bottom of, or you might just be going through awakening and you need a little guidance. Then that might be something that you'd be interested in doing. We could just chat, and I do a pretty good job helping see people through that kind of a thing.
Awesome. I mean, when you do this, do you get a lot of questions in regards to past lives and stuff like that?
Well, sometimes people almost get into that without even realizing that's what they're doing, you know, because they start realizing they have some kind of inclination towards something. I mean, that's one thing, that past lives isn't necessarily in the front of people's minds, so they don't have things that might be related to past lives. They aren't even able to, like, integrate that way, because it's not even in their mental lexicon. So they might just say, hey, I kind of feel like I remember being here, or you know, I saw this picture and it invoked some kind of a feeling out of me, you know. But going through it, you find that those are the first clues, the first hints towards discovering the story of your own soul's journey through life's incarnations.
Have you ever done some kind of regression yourself, and how did this go about, so to speak?
Yeah, well, I did. I not only did a sort of regression, but I spent years just kind of reabsorbing life after life of experience and knowledge and real presence. You know, the awareness that I gained in that life, I was able to just bring back into the being that I am today, and really make all of that part of what I do in the present. You know, that's, to me, is a really important thing to highlight, you know. So I could start kind of going over one thing that was really helpful is a technique out of Osho's big weighty tome, the Book of Secrets, you know. I mean, Osho's got tons of books, and they have different angles and different approaches, but the Book of Secrets is like an encyclopedia of meditation techniques, and it's based in Tantra and some of the stories of Shiva. And one of the techniques that really rung true with me and helped me begin to do this past life regression type of thing was unraveling, basically starting with where you are today and working backwards, like almost creating reverse vortices of time. You know, usually time is moving forward, but you create a little pocket around yourself of where you just start thinking like where you are today, and you go backwards, you know, last week, a couple weeks ago, a month ago, years ago, and you really feel what it was like to live in those times, and you keep going back and back. And you know, at first, doing that, you hit what is the territory covered by psychology, Western psychology, and, you know, the suppressed subconscious, things that you've kept inside that needed to be expressed. Yeah. You'll encounter those first, way before you hit the past lives. So part of the trick is that you have to clear that space out so that your energy isn't being wasted in sustaining the pain of the past,
So,
and the immediate past.
Could this be where many people actually quit the process, so to speak, because it becomes too difficult?
Oh, yeah, it's extremely difficult.
Yeah.
It's extremely difficult because some of the stuff, yeah, it's been just sitting there for many, many years, and some of the stuff is the stuff you desperately avoid. You don't want to see it, and it does hurt, and, you know, it makes you maybe for a time feel really vulnerable or really terrified to go back into those things. You know, that's part of where I cultivated a warrior mentality, in a sense, and some of the people that I encountered along the way helped bring that about in me. There's fine warrior, Reverend Gabriel Ra, who I hope to... I was talking to Shab about us going to track him down for a, for a Red Ice exclusive. Driving to him and just doing a... catching him for an interview. He said he would do it sometime. He's one of those spirits that wandered the earth, you know. It might be easier to try to catch him where is in space. So I think we're going to try to do that, but...
Excellent.
Hearing him speak and being around him, and you know, he actually gave me a sword. I actually encountered him first at a hippie fest in Minnesota, where he had a booth and he was just chilling out there, and he had a bunch of swords. And I came in and I respected his place. I honored the swords and I recognized spirit in him, and then he saw that and recognized it in me, and we did, we've been like really good. We just don't have to say much because we just kind of recognize it in each other, and he's been really cool. But then I picked out a sword that resonated with me, and he gave it a blessing of courage, which is what I asked for. But anyway, he was cool, was that all helped like bring about this strength of spirit to encounter these things in the subconscious, because unless you do that, they will overwhelm you or break you down. You have to have trust. You have to have a certain amount of faith that you'll get through it, and there'll be the other end. And even to the rational mind, one way you can look at it is, you know, if you don't face it, it'll just go on and on and on.
Yeah.
And if you do, no matter how bad it is, it'll be over at some point, and in time it'll fade away. And so, that energy will be recovered.
I mean, this is some a technique we all can do. We don't have to go to a quote professional, you know, psychic to do that kind of regression to dig this out. This is something we can all access, I guess.
Yeah, it really is, you know. I mean, it helps if you have somebody around that you can talk to that actually won't, well, provide a comfortable place where you can talk about it a little bit. That's the whole reason of Sangha, in one sense, is just to for people who are sharing the journey to be able to at least, you know, express a little bit of it. I mean, you don't have to. I mean, it's just... yeah, anybody can do it. That's everybody lived their lives, so everyone can go back over their lives. I mean, another way I sometimes might refer to this, or it reminds me a lot of what they say, you know, when you die, you have you flash over your life really quick, you know, and you see, that's what you'd see. See, and in this kind of a technique, we're going back and doing that consciously now. So essentially, if we do that at the moment of death, when we cross into the other realm, we should be able to do it consciously without any attachment, because we'll have already come to terms with all of that ahead of time.
I mean, because I actually did got a kind of a question on that. If you think that we kind of consciously at some point are going to be aware of all of our past lives to kind of draw, you know, learn from them in that sense, because today, I mean, we're, when we're coming into these lives, we're, or at least most of us, are totally blank, so to speak.
Yeah, I really feel like just coming into the body, that's just part of the whole deal, is that compression, you know, kind of crushes us, and then we learn to look outside through the senses. I mean, that's why some of the core of Buddhism was be to get over your five senses, and the whole non-attachment and kind of detachment or observation mode is what does that. You can see, you can literally have part of your being that is watching the impulses come in through your senses, and if you get some space from that and get... See, this is one of the things, is to not doubt yourself. See, that's how you foster the sixth sense, or the intuition, the inner voice, the inner guide, your own link to the source, is just don't doubt it when you hear it. And then also you have to learn to move with it and let it come in. And that's part of the past life stuff too. And it kind of also starts forming in the imagination. Like you'll start, but that's where memory, it's like your imagination reverse projects the memory, I guess. And that's how it comes back in. You remember it through imagination, and you just gotta realize that that has its own validity. Don't just say doubt yourself in the sense, oh, that's just my imagination. No, well, that is your imagination. No, don't doubt it. That's a realm unto itself, and that's how some of the soul recollects the past life memories.
So I mean, how far back do you think that we can go? I mean, there are, of course, numerous ideas about, you know, people who have been, of course, to places like Atlantis and so forth and all of this. But, I mean, it kind of reminds me a bit about even remote viewing in that sense. I mean, you think that we can kind of get information out of this, of our, you know, more mysterious and hidden past of you know, previous civilizations and so forth?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I feel like there are certain eras of history that I have an intuitive feel for now that is not just based on knowledge or information. I mean, that's kind of a nice thing to do, is to read a lot of history or learn a lot about history, but then going through your own past lives, you start also having a resonance for certain eras, and then you, when you recover that part of yourself, you have an aesthetic sense of what it was like to be there, because yeah, you have literally reabsorbed that experience.
So this could be a real truth archive in that sense, to actually find out, you know, what has been happening in history, because a lot of it is a bit cloudy.
Oh, yeah. We just have to loosen up our ideas of what could be occurring here, you know.
Yeah.
And one, you know, we can work off of that, what you said, how far back can you go? Well, I think you can go right back. You know, I view kind of it like soul's orbit. The earth, essentially, and dive down in, come back out, dive down in, come back out, dive down in, come back out, and you kind of spin through and gain experience, gain knowledge, maybe gain momentum, you know, just learn the lessons of what it's like to be in the energy field of the earth, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that's all pretty local, you know. You could probably cruise out around the moon and stuff, and but I also think that you can come into this whole solar system even before that, or working backwards, that you can remember all your past lives, remember the whole of who you are on the lessons you are learning here, but also even get back to, for some people anyway, back to before you even came to this planet in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
And back to maybe the sense that I have a couple friends where we chat about the fact that we both resonate with Pleiades, you know, the area of Pleiades. And that's where I've kind of referred to that occasionally in my writings and stuff. And I even said a little technique that somebody wrote me that they did it, and it sent chills up their spine, you know, to just say, you know, I'm from Pleiades. And see how it feels, you know, like, you know, just to even allow such ideas, you know. But I think that it makes total sense that it could work like that, you know. It's a kind of combining the inner spirituality and the outer cosmos into just, it all works together. There is no distance. They are one and the same.
You know, there's this myth in the Mayan legend about the underworld, where the souls are born and where they kind of end up, where after the body, I guess, has stopped functioning. And the place was called Xibalba or Xibalba, and it kind of sounds like Shambhala to me. I mean, do you think that they're talking about the same place here?
Well, you know, they're probably all referring to places just maybe on a different vibratory level,
Yeah.
And just like I've talked about this with Shab, who's coming back very soon to do an awesome show about Ching Hai, Supreme Master Ching Hai, the Master, from the East, and we'll be catching that. But we were talking about just how religions will even create their own realm on the astral plane, like Christians. You know, we'll have a Christian heaven to go to, essentially, because with their own collective belief and mindset and whatnot, they've been able to, in years and years and years, because really the astral realm is works that way through like intention or focus, or you can manifest things quite easily, you know, even more easily than in, you know, a denser 3D physical world. You know, things are in the imaginary realm or in the realm of vision. You know, the vision is another way to put that. You know, there's many native traditions. You know, I read some of the Castaneda books, Don Juan, and some of those trips and the teachings he taught about. He talked about vision quests. You know, there's a shaman like aspect to some of the way I think I see this too, you know, that we recover parts of our soul. We go back and recover pieces of ourselves, you know, bit by bit, you know, and so if you can even look at it in the sense of, for a moment, look, kind of remove the usual concrete idea of past lives, and then let's go back to that idea of spiraling backwards. And so I got to where we were spiraling through our immediate past, you know, back 5 years, back 10 years, back 20 years, even to then all this really dense stuff from childhood. And one of the tricky parts of that is, you know, that's the kind of thing that it's hard to express outer. You can't find a much outer validation for. That's like your own personal burden in a sense. You know,
sure.
And you have to learn to self-validate or face up to it and just release it. That's why sometimes just crying, you know, just bawling your eyes out, or just even shouting, expressing very intense emotion, you know, even anger, or even, you know, I'm a big believer that getting it out is the best thing you can do. You know, there's no holding it back anymore. And the faster you can get that stuff out, the farther you'll go, you know, and the better you'll feel in the shorter amount of time. You know, you really have to release that stuff.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I mean, it seems to be I don't know if this is the case, but the general idea I got is that, you know, in regards to a lot of New Age philosophy, I guess it's about, you know, suppressing in that sense the anger. I might be wrong there. I don't know, but as you say, this feels like it's very bad to clog it up, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we have to be real careful not to create another, you know, the New Age sometimes can almost get a little dogmatic in its own right.
And sure, yeah.
Maybe judge against real feeling and emotion intensity sometimes, but they wouldn't judge against that in Zen. And I, you know, I'm interested in, you know, what is in the purity of just Tao as it stands, and you know, intense emotion. I mean, well, that's another aspect of Tantra. I mentioned it before, and I basically learned it from Osho, or reading through Osho, and just kind of some of Shab demonstration. And, you know, of course, I've read many other books, blah, blah, blah. But one of the key things is just to say yes, or to accept, and to not judge against it. See, if we have an intense feeling like anger, you know, maybe somewhere along the while when you were a kid, someone came up and smacked you, and you were really angry, but you were like more sad and scared, so you kind of swallowed it down or something.
Yeah.
And so now you're however old, like, you know, 30 years old on the path, and you're working your way backwards, and you come across that, okay. Well, in one sense, it feels a little ridiculous, maybe. You know, you feel like, well, I'm 30 years old now. How could I have to, you know, go back to something that happened when I was four?
Yeah, sure.
And re-feel that from that kid's perspective with all the innocence and youth, you know, the pure innocence and in that real open hurt, you know, like humanity betrayed you in a sense, like you trusted absolutely, and maybe early on, anyone's bound to have those first betrayals where someone causes you harm and you start realizing that the world's kind of a wild and scary place, and you start building up those barriers, those borders, you know, those protections.
Yeah.
And so we have to get all the way down. See, that's the first really dense veil which blocks us from seeing past life, is our own basic hurt and pain from this life that we haven't resolved. That takes all of our attention and all our efforts, so we never can get past that, usually.
You know, how about, have you studied or read something from Edgar Cayce? He seems to have quite an interesting, you know, way or method to kind of get into these altered states. Basically, it's called, you know, the sleeping prophet, I guess. But have you encountered this kind of technique that he uses?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I've read about him, and I've read some of his... I mean, I guess there's just some mountains of material from what he did, too.
Yeah,
so
sure.
You could never, unless you were really devoted to it, I guess you couldn't say that you, you know, knew it inside and out. Because I know myself, in any corner of my work, there might be a different character I'm slipping in there. So you never know.
Yeah.
Someone's body of work, I've pretty much let go of drawing too many conclusions, and that's been a really good thing in my life, is to just leave things a little amorphous, and that's not a problem, you know.
No, sure. I totally agree. Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. You know, I hear that he goes into some kind of trance or something, and then I don't know if it's his higher self or his higher self in communication with guides and entities, or also just sometimes other entities, you know. But I don't know. I don't doubt that he could definitely pull up some good stuff. Or maybe like what we were saying, I know he has some of that ancient civilization stuff where he's got some things he talked about, Atlantis or, you know, ancient civilizations, which, you know, I consider that valid, you know, as valid as anything else.
Sure.
You know, that, hey, that's a human report on something. I think that what we get internally like that is part of the collective memory of the human experience. You know, there have been times in my own meditation, just sitting in a chair. I wrote a tune about it, actually, called The Process. And I was just sitting in a chair, and that's when I started getting into the idea of tuning into the spirit of Earth directly, or the mind of Sun directly, and I felt this was like when I was starting to really connect with the Sun, and I started seeing just time on Earth in a much longer perspective, you know, not even thousands of years, but, you know, just the ebb and flow and the rise and fall of civilizations and how they do kind of eat one another up, or they just kind of it almost seemed like that, just like you see those time lapse maps of history of where empires kind of ebb and flow. Kind of saw that as if from, you know, on the moon looking at the Earth and just having an overview and just kind of watching how there's these really big forces that move the waves of humanity, and for us to have that ego or very personal view of things is just kind of... You still with me, Henry?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Geez, I heard a little weird voice.
Okay. Oh, no, I'm still here. Yeah.
You just know that you start to see the big perspective and realize that the personal, little personal idea, well, you kind of give that up. You learn little by little, I guess, to let that go and let that dissolve into more of the universal plan, the bigger scale of things, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree on the so to speak, on the picture you're drawing for us there. Interesting that you also mention the sun in actually in relations to that, but because again, I mean, if we were to tie this back to the Mayans, I mean, they obviously, and the Hopis too, I believe, are speaking about the connection with the sun and with the ages. I mean, did you get this sense kind of intuitively in regards to civilizations and the sun and how the sun kind of, I guess, interacts with us and our civilizations?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be very easy for a civilization to open to the sun, and you know, it's kind of that language. You know, we talk about it on Red Ice, or your other guests talk about it, the archetypal language, you know,
yeah.
Or you know, a whole other way of communicating. You know, we try to make things communicate with us on our level, but we are innately set up to communicate with other things on their level, be it animals. Well, we can phase into animal speak and leave them where they are in their realm and learn their language and let them be what they are, not try to superimpose a human image on them, and we'll be able to interact with them just fine and gain much from the experience. Imagine if we did that with giraffes or elephants on a bigger scale. Well, you know,
yeah.
We also can do that with if the creatures of the planet are alive. I mean, it's easy to see the planet itself is alive, the ecosystems,
sure.
the plants, you know, it's all sprung forth from, you know, it's like an organic skin.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't have to look at it as, again, superimposing a human body on what life must be, but planet itself is a type of body, and maybe even a more evolved type of body. What it could be better than a sphere hanging out in space? I mean,
yeah.
That's a pretty good body, you know, just kind of cranking through the weather systems, and
yeah.
You know, and I feel the human suppression. I mean, you know, that fear that's perpetuated on the Earth right now, and a lot
mm-hmm.
of the media and chitter chatter out there causes people's subconscious to be quite troubled, which causes literally storms in the sky, you know.
Yeah.
I believe that if people were to become more aware spiritually and cosmically, that the weather systems themselves would calm down and Earth itself would show a more peaceful face, because it would be able to just kind of rest again. It wouldn't be a cause. There wouldn't be a cause and effect bringing forth that kind of dynamic change necessarily.
Hmm. So we could say that we are in for a heck of a ride, considering that I guess we're in the process of learning how our own consciousness is connected with, as you say, with the weather and the systems of the Earth, because they're, you know, really drumming the global warming issue and all of this stuff. And I mean, if that perpetuates itself as we are thinking about it and so forth, I mean, could this be the rude rude awakening that our consciousness, I mean, in a good way in the end, of course, but
yeah.
Because hopefully we're going to come out of all of this realizing that we are connected with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes rude awakenings are the only awakenings anybody understands. Actually, many times, you know, I mean, that's classic Zen stick, you know, that people just won't see it until something forces them to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I also think it goes back to the application of technology. I mean, I think that, you know, all this disturbance in people and, you know, the destructive nature towards the environment that people have, it basically is the spiritual issue, you know. It's from lack of heart. It's from lack of feeling interconnected with life. You know?
Yeah, sure.
Sometimes frustrate people in a philosophical conversation, because for me it always comes back to life and the laws of life. And, you know, I don't see how extreme destruction is in line with the universe of or an earth of creation, you know.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, sometimes there needs to be periods where things are cleansed in some way and compressed, and you know, I guess that is part of the growth process. And I really believe there is a collective experience going on that is somewhat analogous to an individual's progression on the path, you know, going back through the subconscious. I mean, we could see a whole society going back through the subconscious on the internet, you know, how all these new takes on history and all everything that ever happened, you know, is suddenly brought back before our eyes to re-examine, you know. And so I think even humanity right now is still a little bit of shock over being made aware of so much in so short a time, and even what the humanity's collective reality, or what they believed was life, got changed. It got knocked in some way, and everybody's world kind of got shook up. And maybe in one sense that does facilitate the surge in some, or is the bump that's needed for someone to begin to look for solutions of a more lasting nature. But I feel if we eventually become more aware and recognize the heart and the connection to all of life, we'll naturally apply technology in ways that could solve most of the major issues the planet is facing. You know, we really could ease the burden a lot. We have to also be able to be flexible with the economic systems. You know, we have to be able to adjust certain things or write certain things off or just kind of give it a rest, you know, so people can be rejuvenated or, you know, get back to real life on the planet and a real value for real things and valuing truth and spirit and art and music and culture over, you know, war and violence and darkness and fear.
Sure. I mean, it feels like we are in a kind of a underworld cycle, I guess. I mean, if in regards also, I guess, to past and previous civilizations, I don't know if you got the feeling that they have gone through, you know, similar periods that we have. I mean, we had World War One, of course, and Two. Feels like the kind of culmination of our dark period. But who knows? We might be in for more or a worse period yet to come. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, it's funny. I wrote a tune called Armageddon was in 1945.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. That's awesome.
Because there really was an extreme quality about that, a real intense, you know, absolute purging of subconscious to some speed, you know, to some sense. And also, you know, I mean, there were great and powerful forces going through people. You know, it wasn't just people, it was forces moving through people.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing it took me a while to understand is that, you know, let's just say a force like anger. Okay, let's say I'm angry, and I go bump into you, and you get angry, and then you're walking around all angry, and you meet five people, and you tick them all off, so they're all angry, and then they make a bunch more people angry, something like that. Well, that's, you can also see beyond the people, there's a force there with its own inertia that goes and cruises through the people.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of opens up. That's what some symbols do. You know, you hold up a symbol and pretty soon you're channeling forces, and then you channel it right through people. So, you know, symbols can unlock gates or energies or, you know, become a portal through which things flow, you know. And as we see through history, you know, some of the most intense countries were the ones who used symbols in the most blatant way. You can see that in our modern life, you know, we're bombarded with symbols, and I think a lot of people are numb to it or dull to it just because they're so all-pervasive. And, you know, it's just that the ridiculous technique of repetition should be recognized by everybody once and for all, that if they're repeating something, it means they don't have life, they don't have originality, they don't have spontaneity, they don't have anything real to say. So for me, it's almost like the opposite. If I hear something being droned on and on, I'm like, geez, you know, great propaganda, you snake in the grass or whatever, you know. It shouldn't be something that you just kind of pick up, you know, people just pick it up and just repeat it because they're not really paying attention. They're not really disconnected from it. It's a straight line to their brain, and it wires their thoughts. And once that occurs, it's hard to unwire them or to unplug them. You know, it's a great shock, and it's a... See, it's a very different way of looking at life. It's a different existence. And, you know, I mean, we talk about, there's something you said made me think about this. You talk about ancient civilizations, you know, it's like, and something about that enchants people, ancient civilizations, wow, you know. And some of my early dreams, like, even when I was a kid, before I knew that I was, you know, like the kind of person I was, a spiritual being who was to recollect all this stuff and what that would mean to my life. I had many dreams that I, even just on my own, was able to recognize that they were different. I called them epic dreams. A dream where I felt it was more of a reality, where I was actually there, where something was actually occurring, or where I was truly experiencing living phenomenon, you know, and just when I was a kid, even looking back on it, and see, this is another thing, you unravel, like I said, and you even unravel your dreams. Your whole life of dreams is a roadmap to your past lives and your soul. So not only do you have to go over your waking state, you have to go over your sleep state and all the dreams you've ever had, and kind of trace those back and decode those, and don't just say, you know, disconnect from their meaning. They all can be coded back. They all have meaning. They all have purpose. They all have something they're trying to show you.
Absolutely.
One a good example was this. I had a dream. I was on my first grade playground. This was back around the time when I was in first grade, and I was swinging on the swing, and I jumped off and ran over to the bushes on the side, opened the bushes, and there was a great step pyramid before my eyes.
Oh, amazing.
And I had never even seen such a thing in my life up to that point. You know, of course, now I've seen it many times, pictures of it. And, you know, but, it opened up before me. And
amazing.
Later on, I remembered it and was able to trace back to my own life in that culture and that civilization. And I also saw that I had already put symbols of that around me. You know, I had pictures of things like that, like in my older life, like I had relics of that time and hadn't even really realized why. I just kind of liked them. I just felt like they appealed to me for some reason. And then come find out, you know, so that's probably why I do like to speculate on the Mayan calendars or the 2012. I kind of feel like I was like a priest or a witch doctor or, you know, that kind of a dude in that culture, you know, where you had certain kind of, then I also think maybe some of the shaman qualities I picked back up might, some of it might come through there too.
Very.
But this is kind of an example, you know.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think the dreams, as you say, is the closest. Well, I guess people who don't experiment in that sense, either spiritually or through drugs or something like that, that actually you know, enables them to go into altered states and so forth. But dreams is the real evidence of a visual, you know, mystery that actually is accessible to people. Very, you know, they just have to go to sleep and it's potentially right there. So it's a really, really awesome aspect. I totally agree. I mean, do you in regards to the Maya, by the way, have you, I don't know if you've seen the movie The Fountain by Darren Aronofsky?
No, I haven't seen it.
He's the dude who did the movie Pi also.
Oh.
And he brings up quite an interesting point. I think he connects kind of all of the 2012 and the Mayan issue in some sense. But anyway, there is a scene in there where he actually travels towards the end to this point which I brought up earlier, the Mayan place called Xibalba, and he kind of incorporates many of his previous lives as he enters this zone of the underworld together with the I think it's his wife or something, but it's really visual and beautiful and kind of incorporates a lot of stuff that we've been talking about here today. So,
that's cool.
Yeah, check it out. The Fountain, awesome stuff.
Okay.
And by the way, another thing regarding the Earth, I've heard people referring to that we are, as a species in that sense, and even, I guess, our souls are tied to the Earth in a very special way, meaning that if all life is, you know, or was, have sprung from the Earth, so to speak, even the Earth is the originator of our soul in that sense, meaning that we actually are tied to the Earth, like you expressed earlier, that we actually, when we die, so to speak, we kind of go around and revolve around the Earth until it's time to go down again. What's your take on that? Do you think that is a kind of a possibility here?
Yeah, I think some of that is the case. You know, one thing I like to mention is, you know, one quality of the Earth is the quality of the heart. You know, it has that true nourishing nature. You know, and some things when you go through subconscious and encounter it, you can give that up to the Earth to heal in almost like a motherly sense. You know, it's not just so many things are more literal than we tend to take it. And the mother quality of the Earth is definitely one of them. And it's not just a human mother kind of, you know, but human mothers maybe have some of that quality, but it's a more general sense. You know, a lot of being able to get the feel for a planet or the sun or some of these broader entities, gods, etc., which are kind of hanging out on the astral plane. There's all kinds of entities all over the place we can contact with.
Yeah.
But again, that's the other side of where, you know, we were speaking earlier of tuning into a dog's language or something like that. But we also have to tune into Earth language or sun language, and they're each different in their own place, in their own way. That's the nature of it, you know, where Earth is abundance and a heart and giving and blossoming and growing and flowing and music and celebration and just great unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And then the sun is, you know, is the courage and the intellect and create just that flow of creative ideas and rejuvenation and pulse, you know.
Yeah. Do you think that there's a lot of I don't know if we can call them that, but I guess new souls on our planet right now, or fresh souls or young souls?
Yeah. Yeah, so that goes back to partly like your other question, too. I see that some people like myself, I don't think I was born here.
Mm-hmm.
My existence, I was, you know, I, like I said, I feel my own ties to the Pleiadian realm. And I, in my ties to that realm, I was not a dense being like I am here. I was a much more cosmic entity without such form, you know, more like you know, just light, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then you cruise out of there as part of your mission, I guess, or part of what you're calling, because every being from any realm will have some kind of driving force as part of their life.
Yeah, sure.
You know, flow.
Sure.
You know, a purpose. And so then in your purpose, you know, I've always been the kind of person to reach out. I reach out. I don't, you know, that's just how I am. Again and again, I'll put myself out there and express it's something that, you know, even at times I try to hold back in my life or watch out for, but geez, you know, I'm just, by nature, I just do that again and again, and I've come to accept that, and that's just a good thing, and that's part of where I say you got to kind of self-validate and just realize, yeah, that's how I am, and whatever people think, that's fine. I just and myself doing my thing, and that's all I can do, you know.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
oh yeah,
yeah. Go ahead.
So I guess that was kind of a backdrop to coming. So then, like myself, I think I would come cruise into this place, come into the solar system through the sun, somehow, and then cruise over to the planet that you can incarnate in, and you know, start hovering around. Then you go into the body. Then you get really into that experience, and you keep going around, and you keep going around. Mm-hmm. But then at some point, you can kind of absorb the spirit of the place. Like, you don't have to live a life is this, a life is that, a life is this, a life is that. When you get just what the idea is, yeah, okay, I have lived all these lives. I get that. I've lived every life. You know, I've been every role. I feel what it's like from every perspective to live here and to get that. I think that's part of what you get coming to Earth, is that heart or that sensitivity or that it opens you up. Part of the place is that it, by nature, kind of pulls you open, makes you more open, because that's how life is here.
Mm-hmm.
But we feel pain. Life, you know, is suffering for many because they resist that opening, and that opening is changed. That's why, you know, the way of life, Tao, you know, Lao Tzu, is change.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
you have to let it go.
Seems, you know, we were talking a little bit about that in our email conversation regarding Pluto, I guess, the planet, and regarding, you know, changes and how difficult it can be to cope with them. But in regards to Pluto, do you think that could have something to do with it, with the period that we're going through right now?
Well, yeah, you know, it could, because, you know, I spoke with Shab a lot about this recently in regards to my own chart.
And mm-hmm.
There was, of course, Pluto moving through my chart, which caused kind of great change in my life, top to bottom, kind of like a cleansing experience. And, yeah, it is hard to allow huge changes, because we do kind of get fixed in the habits and patterns and to get this sense of security or this buffer from raw life, you know, where we feel like we've got our own little zone set aside and we don't have to always encounter life in its full edge, you know. And I think Pluto, and I believe also there's greater cycles of Pluto which affect generations, you know, like maybe a whole generation is under a certain Pluto influence for a while.
Yeah, sure.
Like that.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say specifically on the details, but I definitely, after speaking with Shab about it and reflecting on my life, and I definitely sensed the Pluto energy. And I, you know, part of that change is to cleanse and to also open up for a new direction.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
It's like the symbolically, I guess, the death of the old. The death of the old is also the birth of the new.
Sure.
And the new brings new life and new possibilities. And, you know, I feel like in my own life, this is kind of something I think. I've lived in many different cities, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And in each city, I kind of built up a life. I did a certain kind of thing, met a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, I moved to another city. Well, that's almost like another life. So my time in one city for a few years, well, that's like a past life.
Yeah.
Then my time in another city for 6 years, well, that's like a past life. And then you go, so almost you live little mini lives in this life as well. So it's not all so neatly chopped up as to just say, well, from when I'm born to this period is one life, and then I had another life from this time to this time. Well, there's also, even in any given incarnation in the body, we have many cycles and many periods that change and are different and bring different energies, and we can tune to that. We can see that beneath all lives and incarnations is this stream of continuity. And that's where our greater soul journeys lie. We have small little lessons in our daily lives, but we have these greater cycles, these longer-term lessons that when we can get deeper into those cycles beneath it all, we can come to see what we've been working on in a grander sense, you know, and then take that up consciously and move forward on it.
You know, one thing that really that came to mind when you were speaking about that you know, death opens up for new life, so to speak, is regarding, of course, the celebrations they have in Mexico, for example, with the Day of the Dead. And I mean, this seems like a, I mean, from a, if you're looking at it from a purely, I guess, Christian or other religious, you know, more fundamental viewpoint, I mean, this could be considered something almost evil, I guess. But in a sense, celebrating the dead or having this, the Day of the Dead, is kind of like celebrating the new life in a way. Would you agree on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's only perceived of evil is because a lot of people don't like to talk about death. It's their greatest fear, you know.
Yeah.
I've been meditating on it myself again, just to help bring things into focus, into clear perspective, you know.
Yeah.
That's a big part of being a monk, is that you keep death close. You don't forget that. You don't. You know, that's what helps you be present and be aware and be sharp. Is that you know that death will come.
Yeah.
And you don't hide from it. You know, some people, you bring a death up and it's like you just farted in the room or something. Everybody's like, "Ooh!" You know?
Sure, yeah. I mean, the relationship to it is quite... It's strange because it seems like this have been a more... a bigger part of our, again, our ancient past or previous civilizations or whatever. I mean, we have, of course, the image of the skull, which kind of, as you say, is a reminder, it's a sobering idea to have it around, I guess, to kind of get the right perspective on
yeah.
our current life, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a story of around Buddha where he had many disciples go and just watch bodies getting burned for a while before he'd initiate them into the practice, just so that they would have that as the basis for their training. You know, I mean, that certainly undermines ego, and it undermines, you know, it makes it so, I mean, it shows you essentially what little control you have.
Sure. Yeah.
'Cause that's one of the big things that really gets people, is they're controlling.
Yeah.
They want to control everything and everybody. And that's because they are one with their minds. They don't have any space. They don't have any meditative space, you know, of observing that mind.
Sure.
And so a lot of those minds, well, that's what they fear the most, is death, because it's death of that control.
Mm.
And so people throw themselves into control to kind of avoid that whole concept of death.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's based on our, you know, preconceived ideas, I guess, of what the deal is while we, you know, when we enter this life, because, yes, as I say, there is no control and there's no... you know, there are no, you can't be certain of anything, if I say it like that. And I mean, in that sense, there isn't even freedom in that quote, because we are, you know, we are here and we are the subjects of the laws that are around us, the physical laws and all this, and that we are going to die and all of this. Again, I think it goes back to the idea that we have a preconceived idea of what life is, I guess.
Yeah, I know that that's a very good area to explore. You know, it's because for one, I find it just really interesting to start thinking of life that way. You know, for me, that is exciting. I feel like we get on the edge where we're just really getting to what it's all about. You know, and what the concept of being here is. You know, sometimes
yeah.
you can turn it around, and if you think like of your dream world or of the astral world as one type of life, and coming down here is almost like you say, being subject to all those laws, you know, and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. That's almost like, you could say, purgatory. Well, mythologically speaking, many people are in purgatory right now on this earth. They're
yeah.
just doing
yeah.
time with their habits.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they're just numb. They're just foggy.
Yeah.
You know, and they have yet to become invigorated.
Sure. Yeah, it's like the skull, or the celebration of the death is again a kind of reminder that they are in that state. And I mean, I remember hearing a while back regarding someone who allegedly had visited the realm of the dead, so to speak, and he expressed a concern because he saw a lot of people over there, so to speak, walking around without the knowledge that they actually were dead. So they were kind of in this state or in a hiatus or in, you know.
Well, there's definitely that quality too, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, waking up to yourself is definitely kind of a rebirth. I mean, that is the second birth. You know, they talk about being born again in some religions.
Sure.
And that's what it is.
Sure.
It's becoming awake as yourself. And, you know, I know myself, I started over from scratch. You know, I experimented with everything to find out what my true self resonated with. And I still do, you know. And I still try to keep that freshness and that open and clean and new approach to everything, because that's, and again, that skull, I mean, it is, it's a great thing to muse upon, you know. Another thing is it keeps you from holding on to possessions or becoming really attached to things, you know, and all of the philosophies that go along with promoting things above spirit, you know, because death reminds you that you come here empty-handed and you leave empty-handed, and what you bring with you is what you are able to cultivate inside, what you're able to grow, what your being is able to experience, how many people were you able to reach, to share with, to love, to and what were you able to create and bring to, you know, the whole world, the whole society, you know, because I think that, you know, also going back to, like I said, tuning into like the sun or seeing the earth and civilizations come and go and this and that, you know, you get to thinking a lot more like, well, what's my role in the whole scheme of things here? Which gives you kind of a different look at your life, a different way to look at yourself, you know, rather than looking at yourself through just what's happened very recently in the last so many years. You look at yourself and your nature and what you're meant to do, what you're meant to bring, and then no matter what the outside circumstance, you carry that quality of spirit about who you are, you know. It's interesting things. I've met some really spiritual people lately that are just, any, you know, just amongst the people. I've been really just practicing myself, just being in the Zen ordinary state, just, you know, a human being who's just walking and doing what he's born to do, and let it go much past that. And whatever circumstance I happen to be in is almost just like a covering for that, what I carry inside myself.
Beautiful. Yeah, definitely. I think that's really true. I'm looking at the watch here. We're totally over time for this segment, but you know, to finish things off for this time, Chris, I'd love if you could share with us again about your website and mention a few of the things that you got on there, your books and CDs and of course your prints and so forth.
Creativecosmos.org. And there's all kinds of things. I just put up a new video of me playing a song. So if you want to see what I look like, just hanging around in my own environment, you can check that video out.
Cool.
I always put up new articles. And, check out the gift shop. And, you know, I might be doing some updates to that pretty soon to feature the books, you know, which I feel are a very strong part of my work and a lot of the kind of expressions you hear me getting into sometimes on here, where I try to let spirit move me and let me just flow out. I do that in my writing and in my books, and if you read those, you'll kind of tune into that kind of a frequency, and maybe that will help you shake some things loose or help you turn into spirit. And, you know, my art prints too, I feel like some of them I've encoded a lot of secrets of the universe, and if you were to put one of those up in your house, it might raise the vibration and open up some of those channels and just spread a little joy to those around you. So check it out in the gift shop.
Yeah, excellent. Everybody check it out. It's creativecosmos.org. And Chris, of course, will be back with us next month, the first Thursday of every month he's here with us. So do tune in again. And again, Chris, thank you so much for coming on. Looking forward very much speaking with you again next month.
Yeah, today was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Red Ice Creations Radio. We will be back this Sunday with our show featuring Freeman on Anna Nicole Smith, Britney Spears, and Mind Control. Until then, take care. We'll talk soon.